You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Squeeze every moment out of summer with a mango dragon fruit Starbucks Refreshers beverage. It's a combo of sweet mango and bold dragon fruit flavors for a vibrant, refreshing way to cool down on hot days. Your happy is here at Starbucks. Order ahead on the app.
It is the post-match on the Blue Room with me, Dave Downey, Les Roberts and Mark Mosey to reflect upon what felt like a quite inevitable defeat to Liverpool, but in many ways it was very different to how I certainly expected it, and I presume many people who were listening and watching this would predict was going to happen, which in my opinion, which I've said many, many times in the weeks building to this game, was going to be total carnage at Anfield. It wasn't. It was a respectful performance for the most part for Everton. I'll get to the silly business that happens now and again, and that includes Stuart Atwell, and that also includes Richarlison, and also includes Anthony Gordon, in my opinion, which I'll get to. And I know there'll be some controversy over that and what these two guys think as well. But I'll go to you first, Mark. Such a different game than I expected all along. And I thought the way Lampard set us up, it was quite obviously all week long. They've tried to work on defending, on set pieces Liverpool get, on balls they put into the box, on getting as many men as we possibly can around Mo Salah when he got the ball. On the right-hand side and was trying to cut in. And for the most part, we'll do it chronologically. First half, I thought we handled that really, really well. And look, without trying to get to the emotion side, which we always will do eventually anyway, because it's a Merseyside derby, I was looking at this thinking, do you know what, if we keep it this way, we've got a chance of getting some from this. Yeah. How did you feel and all that? Because the thing that I think many people would initially presume Everton were going to try and do in this game was get as many men behind the ball as we could, really keep one man up front, if that, in Richarlison when we saw the lineup, and that'd be it for most of the game. They have a ridiculous amount of possession, which they did, but it wasn't in the way in which I thought it was going to happen. And I thought that was really positive from Frank Lampard, the way in which we set this up.
Yeah, certainly come half time, it felt like we'd won 0-0 and we were all ready to just roll on to Chelsea next week and just pretend.
Oh, Mike, you're going to love that, Mark. You're going to love that.
I was on the hour mark preparing the piss boiling tweets of that, but I thought, nah, forget it, it's not worth it. And we'll probably end up getting beat anyway, which we always manage to achieve. But yeah, as you say, it probably wasn't the style of game that I thought we'd see from Everton, but I think we all agree that it was a pretty refreshing change to see organisation, resilience. You know, the word that everyone goes to that Everton needs generally anyway, but in particular in a derby game, is fight. We absolutely didn't lack that in any stretch. And I think it's interesting what you say there about the way that Lampard set this up. You know, going to Anfield, it was mentioned on commentary numerous times, is that no one resents what Everton were trying to do today. You know, any team in the Premier League right up to and just about not including Man City, goes to Anfield and has pretty much the same MO. Let's not get beat by as many goals as we possibly can. Historically for Everton, and certainly in recent times, that would mean playing five at the back and, you know, trying as hard as you can to put up with an aerial challenge, which is what we're usually faced with when we're, you know, going to Burnley a couple of weeks ago, going to Watford in a couple of weeks. That's stereotypically how you imagine a defensive Everton team to set up. What I liked about today was that we maintained faith in a 4-3-3, if you want to call it that. I know it was very much a 4-5-1 at times, but I think that was a bit of a nod from Lampard, is that we can't treat this game in sole isolation of backs to the wall in danger of messing up any momentum that we've possibly built in the last few weeks of, you know, including Alex Iwobi in a midfield three, which you probably have to sacrifice if you want to bring, you know, if you want to start with Godfrey, Holgate and Keane. And I appreciate that you know, there was a bit of a mix up there in the warm-up anyway. But if you want to play Yerry Mina, you want to go five at the back, you are taking a massive backward step somewhere in your team. You drop Anthony Gordon, you drop Alex Iwobi, you do something to accommodate the fact that we're going to go ultra-defensive. And I think today showed that we can be organised, but we can do that in terms of mindset and not necessarily all tactical or all based on formation. And, you know, certainly for that first 60 minutes, was it? I think the organisation levels were absolutely fantastic, you know, not only to limit Liverpool to not scoring, but did Jordan Pickford have anything to do in that first half other than, you know, a couple of crosses or a couple of half-arsed shots on goal? That doesn't really happen to Liverpool at Anfield, and I think it was fantastic that Everton managed to do that. But on the flip side of it, that was Everton's 32nd game of this miserable season, and that's probably the first time that I've looked on it, you know, I hesitate to use the word pride because at the end of the day, we got beat. But that is the type of Everton team that makes me think with six games left, you've got a chance. And I appreciate that everything that happened before the game today goes totally against that. But we're going to, I think, what did we realistically want to achieve today? We were never going to go and get a point there. We certainly weren't going to go and get three. Burnley were going to make some form of headway on us. I wanted at 6:30 on Sunday night to look back at that and think, that gives me hope. There is at least something to cling on to that makes me think, you know, we'll hold Chelsea. You know, we're capable of being dangerous on the break. Not something I expected to see Everton do today, but, you know, there was a couple of times where you thought, oh my God, we can actually see Alisson here. And that really doesn't happen at Anfield anywhere near as often as it should do. So, you know, an incredibly disappointing day, which is obviously compounded by things that Everton can't control. Most notably, Burnley's win earlier in the day. But I think also, as you mentioned, the refereeing decisions that you know, as hard of a challenge as any team going to Anfield is, it is doubly hard when you get the sort of, you know, again, is luck the right word? But when you get the sort of calls that are made today, I think Frank Lampard's got every reason to be aggrieved at numerous things that happened in that game.
Spot on. Well, one of the things I want to get to Les about, because in our WhatsApp group that we have, he mentioned about this as well. And he was like, can I put a certain tweet out? Which I won't reply it was, but I do actually want to mention what you said. And probably not such a, I don't know.
That's just an explicit way of putting it.
Yeah, it was definitely 18. It wasn't a PG sort of comment that you made, Les. So I'll leave that to people's imagination. But before I get you a similar view, what you said, what Mark just said then, I watched it in a really good friend of mine, and I could believe, and again, I'll get hammered for this. I'm actually, I like Jamie Carragher. I like what he represents, as what he does for a living, what he does in terms of, he's from our world, he's a Scouser, and he's achieving something as a Scouser. I think I'll always have some form of respect for that. I've had him on to do bits of work and stuff and things like that in my career and things. The way in which he conducted himself, I thought, was astonishing for somebody who's meant to not be biased. And look, I get, we all know this is an old Everton fan. We all know this is the massive Liverpool fan who celebrated when Klopp went on, when Origi scored the goal that time. against Pickford. He repeated it today in many ways, didn't he, and scored that goal. But I was sat there thinking, what do Sky Sports actually want to be as an entity? I didn't get it. I understand we see it now and again. We see it now and again from Gary Neville. But I think, do you know what? I'd be thinking about getting them in a boardroom and actually saying, well, do you know what? It's fine if he does that. It's fine. Certain parts of it are fine, but that become a bit really too far, in my opinion. As somebody who's trying to think of it, how I'd edit this if I was working there as a professional. And it just become the point where that got it for me probably wasn't one that you're thinking of, to be honest. It was when Diaz come on and control the ball by flicking his foot behind his ankle, his other leg, and controlling it. And you just see it carry go, oof. Like that lad who does the weird Twitter videos to Liverpool when he's in his bedroom.
It's gone.
It felt like, yeah, do you know what I mean? That lad though, who does all that stuff. And when his mum's in the other bedroom and all that.
Hendo scored.
It sounded, but Jamie Carragher, again, like I said, I respect him, I like him. It just felt a bit amateur, to be honest with you. It felt like something that I think we on the Blue Room have always tried to veer away from a bit when you look at fan channels, and I'm not stereotyping all of them for one minute, but some of them are like that, where you'll see the Arsenal one that you see screaming on the telly all the time for clicks and all that stuff. I don't know. Yeah. I didn't expect that from Jamie Carragher.
Can I jump in there, Dave? I won't be quite as explicit as it was on WhatsApp. It's all part of the product, isn't it? It's all part of the Premier League product. It might seem like nothing, the fact that, you know, Carragher straddles blue and red. It's kind of his stick, isn't it? He's like, he was a toffee, but then he started playing for the Reds and he won the European Cup with him. That's his thing. That's fine. That's okay. You know, do that. If you can get something out of both sides, that's fine. But when it comes to Derby Day and you're on, like, the broadcaster showing the game and he's that sort of biased to the point where, okay, Richarlison, I know he goes down easily and mm-hmm. does people's heads in, but at the end of the day, he gets kicked a lot.
It does add edge in as well, to be fair.
I can't stand it
when he does it sometimes.
When
it actually is an injury, you say.
But in that situation, he rolled his ankle and went down and Carragher shouted, get up. And he never, he didn't once rectify what he said. He never said, oh, yeah, do you know what was wrong there? He turned his ankle. He saw the replay. He didn't do it. And it might seem inconsequential because that doesn't affect the outcome of the game. Everton don't get beat because Jamie Carragher said, oof, had a frigging Luis Diaz bit of control or told Richarlison to get up. But it's all part of the product. And that was my big, big problem with today. I'll jump ahead to the penalty. That should have been a penalty. It was exactly the same as Calvert-Lewin, which the Reds will still claim wasn't a penalty, but it was our first or second in 80 years at the Tin Man. I don't know, whatever it was. But it was a penalty. It was the same thing. Calvert-Lewin's was a penalty. That should have been a penalty. It wasn't. It's all part of the same farce. You've got Sky commentating on these games, giving it that biased commentary. It all feeds into the referees. It all feeds into the narrative. It all feeds into, we want something to sell in May. We don't want this tied up in April. We want something to sell in May. And that's what it all comes down to. They can't risk that there will not be a title race in May and there won't be a relegation scrap in May. You know, we've seen in previous years, there's been the fucking race for sixth.
Yeah.
And it's like, they pulled it up as, oh my God, who is going to finish in the European places? Literally no one who's out of the European places gives a fuck. It doesn't matter. Mm. It doesn't matter. So they want to keep this going as long as they can. And it all feeds into that. And I put out on Twitter before, there have been two massive penalty decisions against Man City and Liverpool for Everton. And we were on the arse end of both of them. Now, I'm not saying we would have scored that penalty and won the game. We may have well have scored it and got beat 3-1. But to have the chance to score the penalty and it to be 3-1, it would be quite nice. And that's my big issue with it. And the fact, you know, as I said, you could say Carragher, it's inconsequential what he says, what he does in commentary. It isn't, though, because it all feeds into the same thing. And I do realise this hat could be made out of tin foil. the way I'm talking now. It isn't. But it feels like it the way I'm talking. But that's just how it feels now. It's like, you know, we're going to Anfield. We put in a good display there because we did. I think even when we went 1-0 down, we still put in a good display. But we did as much as we could to sort of keep a relentless Liverpool team at bay. And I think I was looking at the stats at half-time. We actually won the XG. People into that. They were 0.13. We were 0.23. That's how good we were in that first half. Maybe that's how shit both teams were in the first half. I don't know, but...
Hey, we made that, though. We won that. Like Mark, exactly. We won that.
All you can do in this situation is go to Anfield and set up to do whatever you can. Jose Mourinho did it in the Gerrard slip game. You know, Chelsea were infinitely better than this Everton team at that point. He went there, he parked the bus, he won 2-0, he did his job. It's whatever works. So no matter cry arson about, oh, we didn't do this. He did the same about Man United. You play open against Liverpool, you get beat 4-0. You shut it down, you get beat 2-0. That's you take 2-0. But it's like, you've got to do what you can do with what you're given to go there. But then when you see decisions like that, and you know, the first push on Anthony Gordon, that was at least the yellow card for Trent Alexander-Arnold. Didn't get
in the first half.
Yeah, it wasn't even a foul.
Yeah.
It's things like that. And it does accumulate because, you know, Alexander-Arnold chopped Anthony Gordon second half, didn't he? Which would have been, probably should have been a second yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And it all adds up. But it's, for me, the annoying thing for me with the Carragher thing and everything, it's all part of the product, which they're trying to sell. And it stinks. I know it sounds like sour grapes for me because we got beaten in a derby. We may well have got beaten if it had not been for those decisions. But as I said, it would be nice to just have the chance to do something.
The referee switched that decision in the first half because he knew that if he gave a foul against Alexander-Arnold with Gordon going through on goal, he had a massive call to make at an early stage of a game.
It was possibly a red, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I'm not saying it definitely was, but that you probably would have had to go and have a look at it on VAR, or he would have had to make a big call. And just to echo what Les is saying there, you know, we spoke about this before you came on, Dave, in terms of, I think no football fan wants to be the type of football fan that looks at other teams. And, you know, we're talking obviously about Liverpool and Man City in this league and says you have to go way beyond the normal to get a decision, to win a corner, to score a goal, to win a game. You want to go into every single game thinking that the threshold for doing all of those things is exactly the same as it was in any other game, and ultimately the team with the most quality wins. That obviously happened today, and no one is saying that Liverpool don't deserve to win that game, because if you dominate to the extent that you do, you know, Everton maybe get a point because of resilient defending, but no one's going to look at that result and say Liverpool didn't deserve to win. That's not what we're here saying. But when it seems like taking anything from these games is an actual impossibility, to the point where you have to get one of their centre midfielders to pick the ball up in the penalty area, or as we've mentioned, numerous decisions today that in any other game, and obviously if any of those decisions were reversed today and Liverpool were on the receiving end of any of these challenges, there is absolutely no way on this earth that those decisions aren't given. There is no way, if Salah's running through on goal like Gordon was in the first half or in the second half, that Liverpool don't get a penalty. And you can be as cynical as you like if you're not an Evertonian, judging by what I've just said. But if you take a step back and look at the things that happen in this league, to teams like Liverpool and to teams like Man City, and historically to teams like Arsenal and Man United, the threshold of getting to that point where an Everton could go and get a decision or score a goal or win a game, it's just way off the scale. And as Les said, it's hard not to, you know, this is a tribal, you know, working class sport in this country. And when you bring in a product like the Premier League or Sky Sports or whatever element you think is ruining this for, you know, the common spectator like ourselves, it's very hard not to think you're just part of an enormous game that some fellas are playing at high level, where you just think, you know, those teams, you know, they've not been selected for greatness because they've spent well, they've coached their teams well, they've got great players, etc. But you want to feel like the playing field is level, and certainly there's numerous times, obviously, you know, this season has been ridiculous for the amount of things that have gone against Everton, mainly through their own doing, but also from a refereeing point of view as well. You just want to make, you just want your teams and be made to feel like you're not just being cast aside for some form of greater good. And it definitely feels like that today.
Well, do you know, normally I try and veer away from this, and I think Matt's the same. I try to veer away from the controversy. I think there's a time and a place for that. I like to see other people do that. I don't like to get involved in that for the particular reason that Everton right now is in a real mess, an absolutely enormous mess that Everton are in right now. I hate to write, and it's absolutely right, everything you guys have just said there. For instance, when I did the show with Across the Park the other day, those guys received some messages in from people and stuff, and there was one who messaged saying Everton wouldn't be in this predicament right now, or even be close to being in the bottom three, had Rodri been penalised for that handball. Mm. And so, and Everton's bagged that penalty. Okay, I'll stick with that. I'll go with that and say, yes, okay. Everton bagged that penalty and they get the point against Man City, which again, ironically, helps Liverpool out. We'd have them top of the league right now and all that. There are various connotations with this. If you keep on going further and further down the ladder, when people start talking, that'll be in the postmodern stuff we do at the end of this campaign. If Everton go down, we'll have a show where we're undoubtedly saying, where did it all go wrong? And someone will say, Rodri, we didn't get a pen for that. Or the VAR in the derby and we didn't get that. That's why I think you can drive yourself mad by that as well, first and foremost. I think if you sit there thinking about it, which many of us do, I sadly will tonight, reassessing in my mind what I watched today. And I thought, yeah, Liverpool deserved to win the game. Absolutely right. I think Liverpool deserved to win the game. I thought if Everton got a draw, if we got a draw somewhere in that game, we'd have deserved that, and not deserved it by being the better side or even as good as Liverpool were. Deserved it by actually doing something in a game that, I'm not going to say the word pride, I don't like saying that at the moment, given the situation Everton are in, but the way in which Everton conducted themselves and actually looked like they wanted to do something for our fans that went there, bless them, who managed to keep the courage to go over to Anfield today.
Can I just jump in there? I'm not entirely sure Liverpool deserved to win that game. I think we did enough there.
I'm not saying they deserve to win it by, this is Liverpool and we know what players they've got. I mean, the way in which the goals they scored as well disappointed me more than anything else. And I thought they, like I think you and Matt both made the point that Pickford didn't have anything to do for a very, very long time in that game. I lost my head when Diaz floors that overhead and it goes to the player that inevitably seems to score against us and take the piss in a league.
Yeah.
I kicked off big time over Michael Keane because when it hits into the ground, I think he has ample time to get over and challenge that header.
This is the thing, though. It's like, you know, situations like that are why good teams win games. That's why teams like Liverpool win games because they've got better players and we've got inferior players who switch off at moments like that. But the fact is, at that point, it potentially, I don't know, was that the second goal, maybe?
It was
the second goal, wasn't it? But, you know, at that point, it could maybe be 1-1.
I'm so glad you said this, Liz.
And that's what does me head in. You're already facing an uphill battle against a much better team than you are. And then you get a disadvantage because the referees haven't got the bottle to make a decision. The thing with that decision, he was there, and this has been a massive fucking bugbear of mine with VAR. Referees now don't make a massive on-pitch decision because they think, do you know what? I won't give it, and then VAR will.
And they still get it wrong.
They should be making that decision, and then VAR should put it right. So if Atwell sees that from behind and thinks, you know what, that's a penalty, I'm giving it. The game stops, the penalty gets given. Then they look at it on VAR and they go, oh, you know, oh, hang on a minute, nah, it wasn't. Mm. And then they pull it back and it wasn't a penalty.
Yeah.
But instead, he leaves it. They go and attack and I think they got a corner out of it.
But it's
like the referees now just shit out of those big decisions. They will not make those big decisions. Again, refer back to Man City. It was fucking clear. He was unsighted, maybe, the referee in that game. But I mean, and that's another thing. The referee should be in a position to see a clear handball where the defender sticks his arm up.
But
that's not the game we're talking about. But anyway, but I just think it's just a massive. It's a massive farce, and I don't know. I sound like I'm stamping my feet here. Everton didn't win, so I've seen the arse. But I just think we've got no chance with stuff like that because they've got better players. Our players are going to switch off, and they're going to make mistakes, and they get punished for it. But when their players switch off and they make mistakes, it's usually in the guise of giving away a free kick or a penalty that then doesn't get given. You know, John Matip probably didn't switch off too many times during that game. The one time he did, he took Anthony Gordon down in the area. It didn't matter. Michael Keane switches off in that situation, and it's open play, and they score off it because John Matip is better than Michael Keane. And it shouldn't come down to the fact that just because your player is better, he gets away with stuff. It shouldn't when it's a decision like a clear penalty.
It's not a level playing field. I completely understand that. And that goes back to the sort of full circle that I'm trying to go with. This is when I said I don't like talking about controversies. This would have been such a much easier discussion for the three of us right now, how we lost that game and being battered 5-6, 7-0. We'd be happily sitting here saying, oh, how shit were we? Keane's got to go. Lampard's got to go. However you feel about the way it went. The fact that we actually turned up, put out a performance that is the best you're going to get from Everton these days, sadly, and then that to happen, that makes it much more infuriating as a decision that's gone the way in which it did at Anfield. And, you know, the other side of it that I wanted to get to is the way we decided to set that team up. I asked Mark, I want to get you first on this, Les. So, Mark, have a chill for a second because Les is on one. I wanted to ask you from Anthony Gordon, I want to discuss as almost a topic in his own sort of way, in which he conducted himself, and he absolutely looked class on so many occasions. When he got the ball, he wanted to run at their goal. How many times have we gone there and seen a player that's done that? You can count them on one hand, certainly in most of our lifetimes. I know Les is an old bastard, but you know, last you know, he looks 21, he looks younger than me. When we've gone there, how many times have you looked at a player that hasn't, you know, turned around and put it back to his fullback or put it inside square? He's ran, he's put his foot down, he's dinked it over the legs and carried on running. And they weren't happy with him because of the way in which he conducted himself. He boiled the piss, and I was more than happy with him to do that. So putting him out there with Mikalenko in front of Mikalenko, I thought that left-hand side, that's one of the most, that's probably the worst game I've seen since Alexander-Arnold have for Liverpool. Yeah. And to my own embarrassment, really, for Blues watching this who don't. I watch Liverpool a lot in terms of my job and stuff like that. Alexander-Arnold is constantly somebody who affects goals for Liverpool. He's a world-class fullback, I will admit to that. I think Everton did an excellent job on him, and I think when Lampard's looking back at this, when they get them in tomorrow or the day after, I'll look back at that and he'll be saying, do you know what, that is exactly what I wanted to see from those two lads who played on the left-hand side. That selection-wise was fine for me. Same again. The first one I want to ask you about, and we won't go in chronological order today because obviously you guys are free to say what you want. Decore coming back in was a massive concern for me. I thought he played really well. And I thought he got in and amongst their midfield. I thought he should have cut inside when he takes that chance you have in the first half when Richarlison feeds him in. Matip comes across. And I think it was as obvious as my cat and dog there that he was going to try and shoot across goal. I think Alisson saves it if he hits it on target. He scuffs it anyway. It goes wide. I was begging for him when he got it at the time. Just cut inside. Just pretend you're going to shoot, feint yourself into the inside, maybe even take it on with your left foot. Those things started to happen for us, and Decore was a lot at the centre of it. And in my opinion, I thought it was more of the Decore we actually signed than the one who's looked pretty much dreadful for most of this season.
Yeah, it was, to be honest, it was hard to pick a player who was at fault for anything today. There was no way. I thought everyone did the job particularly well. I think the problem we've got is...
Did you think you'd be saying that, Les, first and foremost? I didn't think we'd be sitting here a few hours after the game saying it's hard to pick who'd done something seriously wrong. That's why I said I'm almost apologising towards when I said he looked like he was waiting for the Mackies when that ball goes across to Origi, who scores. Yeah, that's very, very harsh on me to say that. But I'm with you. Carry on with your point. I'm just saying I'm on with you that no one I looked at there didn't look like they were that bad as they have done for the other 31 games all season.
Yeah, I thought before the game, I said quite a lot that I would just give Liverpool a 4-0 and not play the game.
Right now, mate, right now, if I didn't know what happened today.
I'd be 4-0. Already 2 goals up on that. Which is testament to the display that the players put out. I think the problem we've got, and you know, we've recruited a young manager in Lampard who's still learning how to be a manager. We've recruited him halfway through the season, and halfway through a season that has been an absolute shit show. You know, this season it was basically Mike Walker's first season in reverse, where we started off really badly. Then I think he picked up 4 points. I think, was it West Ham and someone? I think he got 4 points. If he, West Ham, we drew at Norwich or something with him. He picked up 4 points before he got sacked. This was kind of in reverse. We got our first 12 or 14 points or whatever, and then Benitez got sacked. It was a terrible position for a young manager to walk into. And he's still learning how to be a manager, and then he's still learning how to get the best out of this team.
Mm.
And that is a really dangerous position to put us in. When the league position was so precarious. I think the thing we saw today was, I think we've seen in recent weeks, especially at home, is I think Lampard today showed that maybe he's ditched the three at the back. Maybe he's kind of looked at this defence and thought, the three at the back, it makes sense, doesn't it? You think if you put three or five defenders at the back, three centre-backs, two full-backs, if you've got a back five, you've got to concede fewer goals. It doesn't really work like that. That's not exactly how it works. I think he's still finding his feet. And I think we're sort of getting to a point now where we're getting a bit more of a playing style. I may be getting ahead of myself here and just being hopeful, but I think we're getting to more of a sort of playing style where he's thinking, this is how I can get the best out of these players. Because although the away performances have been grim, the home performances have kind of been gradually pretty steady and okay. Mm. And we've been doing all right. And I think we've got, 7 points out of 9 at home. I think everyone's still finding the feet. The problem is we've not got the luxury of time. Normally, with a new young manager comes in, they have got the luxury of time to maybe have a summer, at least, to look at these players and think, right, this is what I can do. He's coming at the end of January without any sort of transfers coming in for him. And has had to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. I hope... After this, we're kind of finding our feet with where we are as a team and the best formation to play. I thought dropping Mina was a bit of a mad one today. But if he comes in and he plays the next 2 games, then maybe it's an absolute masterstroke. Yeah. You just don't know. I think this game was kind of given up before we kicked off.
Yeah.
Looking at the lineup, it felt like that looking at the lineup. And I think everyone did. I was pretty proud without, you know, trying to pat us on the heads and sounding condescending because we still got beat 2-0. But in the circumstances, it wasn't a terrible result at all. So I just kind of think we're kind of getting to a point where Lampard knows what to do with these players. And I thought playing the midfield of the Corey and Allen today was a little bit risky. But I don't know. I think it kind of worked. I can't really point the finger at anyone. As you say, Dave, obviously there was kind of individual errors. Maybe Keane could have, you know, picked Origi up. Not Diaz overhead and stuff like that. And I think Gray let Robertson go for his goal. How annoying was that, by the way, for Robertson scoring against us?
And then the other side with that one as well is when I look back on it, it was like, why isn't Coleman getting out there towards him? Obviously, you can't predict that as a defender. Things like that make you look a little bit silly because the ball's ended up somewhere where you just didn't think it was ever going to end up. And I think... And it was like, Seamus, you've got to get over there. You've got to get over there as soon as they look like they're putting one in because we had a couple of centre-halves in the middle there who were going to deal with whoever else is in there. Don't leave their attacking left-back 10 yards out. Do you know what I mean?
And the worry is, though, that we put a good display in there and we got beat 2-0. And this team seems incapable of putting in 2 good displays back-to-back. So it's Chelsea next weekend, isn't it?
Chelsea, then Leicester. Now, this is the point I want to get to towards the end. We finish this, and I'll come to you now, Mark. Ultimately, within the bottom three, I can't remember the last time this was. Matt refused to. Well, he called me. He said that I was wrong when I said yesterday on the show we did the preview that Everton have already been in the bottom three at some point this season. I'm not sure if you two guys agree with me or not, but
I did enjoy that show in the fact that it was just no way a Liverpool preview.
I know. It seems to be.
We better talk about the game tomorrow now.
Well, that's it. After 55 minutes, Matt goes, the derby tomorrow then, Dave. Should we count on something like that?
Right.
Anyway, it's just like the way everything we do seems to be thrown towards emotion here. We haven't really, on this one in particular, discussed that much about opportunities we had and the way in which we played, substitutes and all that stuff. And yeah, I think it's probably secondary to the way we are right now. And I think the best way to sort of end this is look at this predicament that we've got. Forget that this was the derby that we actually did play well. I think there's stuff that he can definitely use going towards playing Chelsea, and then the midweek following that is Leicester. Those two are obviously crucial shows. In fact, we've gone into 18th place, though, where Mark is a massive concern. I don't think anybody is surprised by it, simply because I expected Burnley to get something from Wolves, preferably not a victory, like, and they've got 6 points in their last two games in what, 3 days?
Yeah.
And they haven't even got a manager. So where we are now, you look at it, Everton into 18th. Leeds play Crystal Palace tomorrow. I don't know about you two, but I actually feel Leeds will probably get something away at Palace, because Palace are finished in terms of what they need to do this season. Having said that, they've been very good. Palace getting to the cup semi and all that. But this situation now, how are you feeling looking at the remainder of these games? We've got one game in hand over Burnley. We win that, we go back above them. There's a positive there in a way that it's still in our hands, just, and I mean just. But do you think we're going, or do you think we're staying?
I think blind faith is the only thing that's stopping me saying that Burnley won't stay up. Everything I've seen from them in recent times, and in particular their fixture list, I look at it and think they'll probably be all right. If I had no Everton connection, I'd say that they've saved themselves. And I know that they're loitering 2 points above the relegation zone, so it's very early stages to say that. But there's something about them, isn't there, that you don't get in some teams that are near that sort of drop zone, that you think there's still a pulse there. There's definitely a life to Burnley that is dangerous for teams like Everton. I look at Leeds, as you say, Dave. They've obviously got Palace to come, and then, you know, three pretty treacherous games. I think most of us are putting all of our eggs into the basket that when they've got two league games left, they'll probably still be on low to mid-30s. And if Everton are able to, I don't know, go to Watford or, you know, pull off back-to-back home victories like Burnley were able to, the point I'm making there is that it's still very much, not necessarily in Everton's hands, but if we're to win four games remaining, if we are to, you know, somehow miraculously get two victories out of those three games in the last eight, and, you know, pick something up at Leicester and possibly beat Chelsea next weekend, I've seen enough in recent weeks. Again, going back to the blind faith philosophy here, in that I can't. You know, if you show me that Everton team today that went to Anfield and at least put up a little bit of a fight, if someone sat here now and told me they're going to totally fold against Watford, I wouldn't believe them. And I get it. We've seen years and years of that exact thing happening. But I think the interesting thing that Les touched on was that I don't think in the short time that Lampard's had, any of us really expected to start seeing any form of philosophy or playing style or any sort of real, this is how we're going to go at football games, because we just expected week on week chaos. And to an extent, it feels like that a lot of the time, because, you know, I'm sure I'll echo the thoughts of you guys, and trying to shake Everton out of your brain at the moment is just totally impossible. But yeah. I think what we've seen in recent games, and even today, and you know, I go back to my earlier point of crediting Lampard with going with what has worked for us in recent weeks. That three in midfield that Everton play, I know I sound like a broken record here, but that suits every single player in our squad. You know, all of the midfielders, the centre halves who can't play five at the back, the two fullbacks who clearly aren't wing backs, they are out and out fullbacks. That is exactly how Everton should set up. And I think that the one thing that we had today, which made me think that, you know, there's promise in what we're doing here in terms of how we set up, was someone like Decore, who was able to link midfield and attack. And I think if you're going to play a disjointed flat three, you put so much pressure on those three lads up front to just create something out of nothing. You know, you're relying on individual brilliance, and you know, we've got some good players, but I don't think any of us would want to single any of them out now as saying, please save us over the next six games. It's going to take a united effort, and someone like a Decore, and you know what, even in the last 20 minutes, someone like Dele Alli who came on, and he made me think, you're possibly capable of linking this play together. And I know you're never going to get a clear picture of that at Anfield, but I know it's a really short thread to hold on to, but just seeing someone like Anthony Gordon on that left-hand side, or Alex Iwobi who got in on that left-hand side as well, I thought at least there's a little bit of confidence there. And, you know, we appreciate the fact that we have got a relatively robust core in the middle, but we're able to find those outlets in Gordon and Iwobi, you know, against lesser teams. If we are able to free those players up, if we're drawing 0-0 in the same breath as we were today away at Vicarage Road in a couple of weeks' time, and we unleash Anthony Gordon on the left-hand side, I expect Everton to score goals and I expect us to win. And that's the thing that I'm really clinging on to at the moment. But I think it was imperative that we got Decore on the pitch today, maybe not solely for today's game, but just to kind of remind not only us, but all of the players around him that this is a lad who, you know, as Les said, it might have been both of you who mentioned that looked very much like the player who we originally thought that we were signing. Someone who, you know, I can't think of anything worse in an Everton format at the moment than watching Abdoulaye Decore try and play that pivot role in front of the back two and picking the ball up off them and being that kind of deep lying midfielder. That is not his game. We want to see him pick the ball up off the other midfielders, play with that a little bit of freedom, link up with Richarlison or Gordon or Gray or whoever it may be. He himself has said this, hasn't he? He said, I want a manager to come in and allow me that freedom. And, you know, some have done that and some notably haven't, but he probably is one of those integral players. And, you know, a lot's been made of Yerry Mina in recent weeks as well. We're going to have to make some pretty difficult calls on quite a number of players, but in particular Mina, who quite simply looks like, I know we talk about those three games in 8 days that we've got coming up in May. I would not put any real money on the fact that he's capable of playing every minute of all of those. There's going to have to be an acceptance and affordability almost to you know, the levels that these players can go to. But I think I speak for all of us when I say that we just can't afford to, you know, the prospect of not playing Mina today, the prospect of, you know, I don't know, leaving Gordon out for a week because he looks like he's flagging, which he is after 60 or 70 minutes of every game. When we are in the point that we are now, we simply haven't got that freedom to be able to make those calls. But I don't know, Dave, to answer your general question, I'm not quite at the point where I'm at terminal misery. And it's frightening to think that there's a little bit more sadness to go here, but I still don't look at the league table, I still don't look at ourselves, and I still don't look at those other two teams around us in Burnley and Leeds and think all hope is lost here. And maybe that is just, you know, blue-tinted naivety, but I've seen enough from this team to make me think that we're capable of winning two or three games. And, you know, I get it might not be enough, but I then look at Leeds and think, well, there's clearly a frailty there.
Well, it now becomes the point, and I think I'm in line with what you're saying there about, you know, is it the blue-tinted naivety? No, it's not. I think it's now getting to a stage that concerns me so much is that we're just simply running out of games. And, you know, I remember when the year West Ham went down, when Trevor Brookham was the manager, and Vicario was there. I think they hit 44 points and went down still, having had a ridiculously good run towards the end of the season. And a couple of things that sort of they sort of reflected that on me. Because obviously no one's, we're not going to get to 44 points, absolutely not. I don't even think we mathematically can anymore. That's by the point. Just one more thing, Les, and obviously same question to you when I asked Mark then, but also the Corey thing that I mentioned, hell of a brave call from Lampard to throw him in, because he has been dreadful, and I mean dreadful.
Yeah.
When I've seen him in recent weeks and months, hasn't been anywhere near the lad that we signed. Obviously, a lot of that is down to himself actually not performing like so many of those players, but others in terms of positional ways, like Mosey referred to then. Brave decision from Lampard. Worked for me. More than happy. I don't think we've got any better. Even if you're talking about maybe throw Delph back in. You clearly weren't match fit at all. Otherwise, I think he would have been in there next to Alan. Brave decisions from Lampard. And then, you know, the fixes that we've got coming up and things like that. But to I don't know, retell the question that I put towards... rephrase the question that I put towards Mark. What I wanted to ask you was, if you were to take that performance today, able to put it into a bottle, and you throw that at Chelsea next week, and you throw that at Leicester away, and the remaining games we have, do Everton still stay up if that happens?
I think so, with that level of performance, because I think if we do that at home against Chelsea, we win.
That's probably, I mean, that's a loaded question for me, because I actually think if we go like that, I think we stay up.
Yeah. Oh, that's been the problem all season, though, hasn't it? Though it's like, can this team put two performances together back to back? And they can't. That, the simple answer is they can't. The point about the core, it's a very good one. Like Mark said, he is a very specific midfielder. So we've seen it all season. Michael Keane or one of the centre-halves plays the ball to him, kicks it straight back, and then it's back on the centre-half to dictate the play.
Yeah.
He won't turn on. I mean, it's
there's
a
no
massive...
Ball, is there?
No, it's a massive... The turn thing is a massive Everton creature since Ross Barkley, but it's probably
it's
never...
It's all coming
been.
Back. Turn,
it is.
It's all coming back.
It is. It's probably never been more, like, apt.
Giving a Ross Barkley a wave there, were you?
Turn, Ross, turn. If Abdullah Corey is further up the pitch and he gets it and he knocks it back to, like, say, Anthony Gordon, and it makes the run sound. But what he's done is his default to the minutes is he's playing so deep, he'll get the ball, he'll knock it back to Michael Keane, and then Michael Keane has somehow, with his massive boot on most occasions, has got to dictate the play. And that is not fair on Michael Keane or anyone who's playing centre-half. You can't expect your centre-half to start dictating the play. Just unless you've got fucking Franco Baresi playing in like centre-half or something. You can't expect your centre-half to be dictating the play. You just can't do that. And that's what our midfield have kind of been defaulting to. Mm. But having said that, if we can put... it's a massive, massive if. But if we can pull out this display today... against Chelsea, God willing, the referees and the VAR do the job. If we can pull out that kind of display against Chelsea and against Leicester away, we'll be all right. But it's just been the whole problem this season is we can't get two consecutive good displays out of this team. A big plus point, Mikalenko. Yeah. I thought he was great again today. He was really good. I've said that on previous podcasts, I was not even convinced he was left-footed, never mind the left-back. But honestly, the last couple of games, he's settled into it. He's obviously needed a few weeks to settle in. He looks every inch a cracking left-back now. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of one less worry. I just think if we can just keep doing what we did today, if we can contain Liverpool for what 60 odd minutes with a couple of bad decisions not going for us, if we can contain them, we can contain Chelsea at home and we can beat them. We've got a decent record against Chelsea. Chelsea won't fancy it at Goodison. Because we've got a pretty good record against Chelsea.
They also don't play that much now because they pretty much guaranteed their place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of over. And
you'll open Lampard and throw a phone call in and say, there's a fake match.
Yeah. Doing all boy a favour, but then even going to Leicester, you know what I mean? I think Newcastle beat Leicester away, did they? Or was that
they also have, and I hate to continue down this sort of ladder of it, but they've got that shithole type of thing coming up as well, haven't they? So
But I just think, though, you know, we go away to Leicester, and you know they're going off the mind on other things. They're not the best. I know the, you know, the first half against Leicester the other night was terrible. But there's no reason we can't go there and do the same thing. Just like, it's just a case of saying to these players, and they're clearly not the brightest, but just say to them, right, what you did there, just do it again there. Just whatever was in your head, just do it there. That's what it should be like. I know you can't play the same. It's not horses, of course. You can't play the same team the same in a different game and that. But it is kind of like, right, you did this much of that good at, and, you know, let's not make any bones about it. Liverpool are stratospheres ahead of us now.
I was
saying to the lads today, we are basically in the Barcelona Espanyol position.
Where they
are that far ahead of us, it's not even worth bothering with. So if we can go to there and do that, we can go to Leicester and do the same and maybe win. I don't know. There's a lot of permutations. There's a lot of things going on before the end of the season. But I think, as Mark alluded to, we probably need to look at Leeds more than Burnley now. Because they're running.
I think running is so much
more difficult.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's really funny that you referred to the entire Everton squad as Class Z in school that just don't know what they're doing and aren't getting any GCSEs and are not able to form themselves into getting a decent career. It's a good job the footballers in it, or maybe not. Mark, do you want to make a final point there?
Yeah, just something that Les touched on, and you know, you mentioned Michael Key, mate, and you know, I think that this was a big thing that happened against Leicester in the week. Is that, you know, as you said, the amount of times that we fed, in particular, Fabian Delph, and without knowing what was behind him, he went straight back into a centre-half, and then it went sideways, and it went to Mikalenko, and then we probably lost the ball down the left-hand side, and vice versa on the right, and it all felt a little bit disjointed. I, you know, in an ideal world, I want to see Everton play out from the back, because that's how football is, as we're told, meant to be. It's meant to be, you know, very technical in terms of getting up the pitch. You know, everything that we've been taught recently about the best sides in this league is that you play out from the back and it's a very structured progression up the pitch. I think my stress levels were a lot lower today, and in particular probably in the last three or four games, because I don't know about you guys, but I think that Frank Lampard has realised that Everton haven't got the players to do that. We've been a lot more direct, a lot more pragmatic. There's just been a general realism. And, I think when a team try to play out from the back and then they make this change to being a lot more direct and trying to win second balls further up the pitch, it almost feels as though you're surrendering that kind of Ruud Gullit sexy football thing, doesn't it? It feels as though you're admitting defeat, you're admitting that you're shit and you can't pass the ball from the back. So let's just pump it up to Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison or Rondon. And I think that it doesn't have to have that connotation of negativity about it. When you are 17th and you need results and you need to get up the pitch and score goals, sometimes you have to look at your midfielders like Iwobi and Doucouré and say, well, are either of those two lads who are going to be predominantly on the ball in the middle of the pitch for Everton, would you rather see them pick the ball up off Michael Keane or Mason Holgate and turn on it and look for another pass? Or would you rather see them being aggressive into a second ball that Richarlison fought for on 40 yards out from the opposition goal and think, well, let's see what we can do from here? And it's definitely the latter for me, because unfortunately, you know, sometimes we have the players who are capable of getting on the ball deep and making something happen. We probably haven't had one of them since Mikel Arteta, potentially. Everything about this squad at the moment and everything that we've been fed from the players themselves, the club, each other as fans, it's based on aggression, isn't it? It's based on getting high up that pitch in people's faces, And it's a lot more that than the kind of slow technical build-up play. And again, I think it's a very Yadar shout every time Pickford gets the ball to say, just lump it as far as you can. But there is an element of realism about that style of play that is very much suiting us at the moment. I've watched Everton go to Anfield in recent years and actually try and play the ball out in their own 18-yard box against what is now, on reflection, probably the world's best football team. And it's crazy shooting yourself in the foot behaviour to go and do that. And I think, you know, previous far more experienced managers have been guilty of setting Everton up in a very naive way, be it going to Liverpool or any other team in the Premier League. And I think that this change hopefully is going to save Frank Lampard and Everton, but if not, it at least is a little nod to me to say that the manager has picked up on something that is clearly a weakness and made an effective change. And, you know, as Les said, as a young manager, you want to see him get onto those moments, don't you? You don't want to see the same mistakes classically made over and over again, which we've seen countless managers come in and, you know, play the wrong style, pick the same players. It at least looked like he's come in and he said, this isn't working. You know, Anthony Gordon's a great player. Let's play him. That there are signs that he's switched on to what Everton are bad at. The only question now is, has he done it soon enough?
Absolutely. That is the big question. It's a big question we'll be talking about a hell of a lot until we actually find the answer to that. And we're all petrified sitting at home in the dark, which I'll be doing in a minute, reassessing all of these things and how they happen. But yes, a cathartic chat, as it always seems to be every single week on every single show, but it's certainly not boring for everyone who's listened to us. So thanks to both of these lads who've managed to go well over an hour here chatting about Everton losing a Merseyside derby. Must have done all right, eh? So we hope everyone's enjoyed, everyone stuck with us to the end of it. We'll be back throughout the start of the week with all the usual podcasts. Make sure you join the Patreon stuff that we do as well, because there's still bagfuls of that to go. And it all isn't misery. We know it's absolutely not misery. It's not our souls like me talking miserable as well. There's a lot of other people on, like Les, what program's yours called these days, Les?
We had
Paddy's mailbag, yeah. That's it. That's what it used to be called. Les's mailbag is what. I'm doing it all over again. It's called Les's mailbag from now on.
The thing is, though, when it was Paddy's mailbag, you had the postman Paddy, but everything was great.
I know. We need one for you. Someone email us in. I mean, someone tweet us in a theme you'd like to see Les start the show from, please.
My dad was a postman, so it's just a very...
Hang on. You're in marketing and all that, aren't you, Les?
What's that?
Your career's in marketing, isn't it? You work in marketing, around marketing.
Yeah.
Pretty loose, and I do apologise if I'm talking you down there, but what my point was...
The thing is, though, on this week, just... And a bit on this week's mailbag, we had questions like, is there anyone more scouts than Tony Evans? If so, who is it and why? And Lord, when you're getting shots in at the bar, what are you getting? That's, you know, that's the sort of mix of questions we get on mailbags.
You can tell you're in marketing by saying those questions on adverts like that on a show like this. But also, I'd like somebody out there, somebody must be able to do this. The Postman Pat theme. Can you just put Les's face on Pat and that'll do us. That'll do us. Please do it. We'll even pay you. We won't really. We're all skin because we all bet on the blue. We're actually doing something. Anyway, thanks so much for everyone for listening. Thanks to the lads. And we'll be back tomorrow, the day after, and the day after that, all the time with Everton content. Thanks very much for sticking with us. And we'll speak to you soon.
With the new Chevy Silverado, you might be driving in this. But with the Silverado's redesigned interior and large infotainment screens, it'll feel more like this. Introducing the new 2022 Chevy Silverado. Find new upgrades. Find new roads. Chevrolet.
Sports Social Podcast Network.